What does one do with five old routers stacked in a pile, Will? Actually, hang on. Four old routers and one old switch.
Maybe recycle them?
I can't.
I'd keep the switch.
I can't. It is a 100 megabit switch. It is a 10 base T switch.
I would just put that on the curb with a post-it that says free on it and let nature take its course.
But it's so small, I don't think anybody would see it.
Well, like put a big post-it on it.
It's not big. For being such an old switch, it's a tiny switch.
What? Why do you have four old routers and one switch piled up in your hallway right now, Brad?
Because you buy routers over the years that as standards evolve.
Uh-huh.
You say, man, I need faster Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy a new router.
But then that's when the old router leaves the house.
No, that's when the old router goes into storage. And by storage, I mean a stack in the hall. Well, I've been going through stuff. Let me be clear. I have not had a stack of routers in my hallway for the last 15 years.
Look, that's some hoarder business. It's on brand for me, but you have a reputation to uphold.
They have been in storage, but I've been cleaning out and reorganizing storage, which is why they are currently homeless, because I don't know where to put them, because one of them is a Linksys WRT54G. Is that the model?
That belongs in a museum.
Hey, let me see if I've got that right.
WRT54G is the blue and gray classic.
That is absolutely the model number. Yes, that is the classic.
Yeah, the original tomato router.
Like, I think in that South Park episode where there was a giant router, I believe it looked like one of those. That's how iconic that router is.
Yeah, you know where it belongs?
Where?
Either in a museum or the electronics recycling bin at your local recycler.
What if I think of a use for it?
You'll buy another one for $5 at a flea market someplace?
What if I think of something I could have done with it and I no longer have it?
Well, then you'll be sad for like 4 minutes. But think of the joy that having that empty space where that thing that you don't use anymore used to be. I can't believe you have twisted me around until I'm on the side of getting. Look, Brad, we cleaned out our kitchen this weekend.
Yeah.
We took everything out of the cabinets. The cabinets that you have in the kitchen that are like where all the crap goes that you use like once a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we took all that stuff out and we put it out on the dining room table and on the kitchen table and on the floor around the kitchen table. And then we looked at it.
It's like having your own yard sale.
Well,
like an internal, a recursive yard sale.
Yeah. We had some real hard conversations about how many unslotted metal spoons we need.
How many
turns out Gene and I have very different ideas about this.
I get it.
I was like, we have five burners on the stove. So that means we could conceivably have five pots at once. We need five metal spoons in case that's the spoon we need for that project.
That's just math.
And she was like, look, the most things we ever have on the stove at once is Thanksgiving. And we don't ever have more than four things going at once on Thanksgiving. And most of them are wooden spoon things, of which we have plenty. So now we have two metal spoons that are not slotted and one slotted metal spoon. And I'm very sad.
I started to ask who won the argument, but I guess I don't need to ask.
Look, the compromise, we made some tough cuts. The food processor that goes on the front of the KitchenAid is gone. We're giving that to a friend. But I kept the meat grinder that we've used twice in the last 13 years. And I put a sticky on it, a little dot on it. That's the indicator. If by the next time we do this, that dot has not been removed because it has been used at least once, my veto power on the meat grinder is gone.
Wow, that's a pretty interesting system that you have.
Look, Gina has dealt with my bullshit for a long time and she knows how this works.
That is tangible accountability.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't you do the closet, the coat hanger thing when you flip your clothes around?
No.
Like every once in a while, I just take all the clothes out of my closet and I hang the coat hangers on backwards. And then if the clothes have not been, if those hangers are not turned around the next time I go clean out the closet, obviously I haven't worn that stuff in whatever period of time since the last time I cleaned out the closet.
Considering I've put on long pants exactly one time in the last 7 to 8 months, I think that system might be in need of suspension right now.
Okay. I mean, fair. The Rona has caused some lifestyle changes. I'm just getting rid of all my jeans. That's the takeaway here. I have one pair of jeans now.
That's
I'm just
okay.
Athleisure 24/7 sweatpants, so, baby.
Toss the jeans, keep the routers. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, toss everything. Get rid of it all.
Except the routers.
The things that you own end up owning you. The things that you don't let the things. Look, there's something that Chuck Palahniuk said in that book about fighting people in banks. And it was right. You should get rid of the crap because you don't need it.
Yeah, well, Tyler Durden never had five routers. So what does he know? We'll be right back.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
I was on a show last night and they introduced me as the host of Brad and Will Make a Tech Pod. And I had to actually, then I was like, actually, it's past tense. And they're like, oh, you're done with the show. I was like, no, it's ongoing. And there was a whole conversation. It was awkward.
Did you have a gigantic fit of pique?
No, I was very cordial.
You expect me to be a guest on your show when you can't even get the tense of my show right?
Yeah, I mean, it is fair. That is a fair critique. But no, it was a very cordial.
I'm joking.
Yeah, no.
We can't even keep it straight half the time around here.
Look, I'm sure there's a Discord log of the conversation that led to the naming of the podcast.
I don't remember it even being that that formal.
I think it was, somebody put something in the field. What do you think? And you were like, yeah, that's okay. That's a good placeholder.
I think that's exactly what happened. Got to the point where somebody couldn't hit save on something until there was a name in there and somebody just typed it in.
Yep. Yeah.
Here we go with another public discussion about renaming this podcast.
Look, it's Thanksgiving week.
Sweatpants Tech Pod is just right there.
Look. If I had known that I was going to spend most of 2020 wearing sweatpants, I would have been 100% on board with Sweatpants Tech Pod.
God, we were so forward thinking. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always next year.
When we launch the Sweatpants Comedy Pod next year, we'll be ahead of the game. So let's talk about stuff. It's a questions episode, first off, because it's been a little bit since we've done one.
Yes.
Next week's Thanksgiving.
Every fourth week.
Yeah, we'll do something that I don't know what we'll do with, but we're going to do something there.
Yeah.
And it's a time to be thankful, and it's a time to reflect upon the podcast past and the questions that we have from listeners, from the audience.
Yeah. Although I just real quick little point of order on next week's episode.
Yes. Hello.
By the time it posts, we will be past Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Meaning, I think we'll have a Christmas tree up.
Yeah, we got to get our holiday podcast lights on,
which is insane to think about. This is the Thanksgiving episode as far as things go.
Yeah, this is as close to a Thanksgiving episode as you're going to get this year.
I feel like our lives are just like slowly trickling down the drain.
Like,
what is time? It's still in the back of my head. It's still March somewhere.
It's funny. Gene and I were talking about this the other night, and like, I'm fine. Most of the time I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm really coping pretty well with the fact that I haven't essentially left the house in 9 months, 8.5 months now, right? And then every once in a while, I'm just like, you know what? This is some fucking horse shit. I have lost an entire year of my life. And I'm really going to be alternately mad and angry and sad about this whole thing, because it was mostly avoidable.
Yeah, as you should be.
And then like, I have the benefit of having my kid here, which like is a positive. I know some people, maybe if you don't like your kids, it would maybe not be as much of a positive, but boy, like,
I'm not going to open that can of worms.
Like, I like my kid, and I've gotten to spend an incredible amount of time with her at an age that I normally wouldn't have. So like, I feel bad that she's had this year stolen from her, but yeah, like at the same time, I'm kind of grateful that I got to spend a lot of it with her that I wouldn't have otherwise. So
that's a good point. I feel way worse for people, young people, let's say between like child age to, I don't know, college-ish than I do for working adults.
Yeah. And like, it's lucky because she was 7 when this started. And like, that's like, when, if you have, I have some friends who have like, I mean, we have friends who have 3 and 4 year olds, and all they know, they don't know why they can't go to the playgrounds, why they can't go to daycare and see their friends. They just know that like, they haven't been to a playground in a year, but they remember what it was like before. And
because those are formative years for people in that age range, you know, like once you're crusty and old and past your prime, like us, it's just like, every year, 1 year is just like the next.
Yeah. But, one more candle on the cake.
That's right.
But yeah, so I think we should turn some Q's into A's, Brad. Okay. The email address, as always, is techpod@content.town. That's techpod@content.town.
It's a good email address.
It's the number one domain.
Look, if you're listening, you should use that email address.
They said that I was a much better guest than PJ from Reply All yesterday on that show. So I was very excited about that.
I don't know who that is, but I'll congratulations.
Look, Reply All is a really good podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Don't tell anybody.
I won't. Surely no one will hear you say that. Oh boy. Okay. Should we get in some emails?
Yeah, sure.
Here's an email. I feel a little hesitant here. Feel a little self-conscious. This person is from Finland and has a Finnish name, as they point out, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
You mean to do it?
Yes.
Is it the question about future proofing?
Yes, that is the one.
Yusu Juhala.
So that's my question. I don't know how J's are pronounced in Finnish.
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how J's are pronounced in Swedish. Okay. But they're close to each other, so I'm going to assume.
I'll buy that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm a noted pronunciation expert, as we all know.
Oh, of course. Yes. I'll let you handle all the Finnish emails from now on.
Yeah, please.
I'll read the body, though. Let's see. How much future proofing should one do? I'm planning to build a house in a year or two and was wondering where I should go overkill and where anything decent will be fine. For example, I'm going to want Ethernet ports in every room, and if I don't say anything, there will most likely be Cat 5e cables running in the walls. But is Cat 6 good enough for years to come, or should I look into running fiber in the house instead? Another example that comes to mind is USB power outlets, but with those, I remember them being 5 volt, 1 amp just 6 years ago, which would feel pretty insufficient today. So would that kind of thing be worth installing if you have to upgrade it every 5 years to keep up with new tech? Assuming it's possible to do that without tearing the walls open every time. There's probably a ton more stuff like this, EV charging, smart home integration, server rooms, etc., that one could or should consider.
Okay. This is a good question.
Yes. I don't have a ton of good answers other than the network cabling, but yes, it is a very good question that I would love to hear people's opinions on. I double checked. Cat 6 is good for up to 10 gigabits. So if you want to run copper, that should be fine for quite some time for networking.
I would assume for the rest of your life, probably for what normal people do at home.
You think?
I don't know
about the rest of your, well, like what are we kind of, are we talking another 40?
I'm almost 50. I'm halfway to 50 at this point. I can't have that much time left.
This podcast is getting really dark, but what kind of time span are we talking about when you say the rest of your life? 30 to 40 years?
30 years. Okay. Like, you know,
I can see this. Where were we 30 years ago? Like,
look, 30 years ago is, we were on the part of the curve that was flat 30 years ago. And then all of a sudden, like 15 years ago, it started going up. And then now it's in the vertical part.
I think we're
plateau for network bandwidth. I don't think you need it that much, really.
We'll see.
10 gigs, pretty good.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So I would say put Cat 6. What I was going to say is, the cost of putting Cat 6 in now versus the cost of pulling all the Cat 5e out and putting Cat 5 in is probably justified, even though it's going to cost you like double for the wire. Right.
Is it really?
It's more expensive, but especially because you want plenum that's not going to make toxic smoke if the house catches on fire.
Sure. I would definitely go Cat 6 minimum. The fiber question is maybe a bigger concern, though, because you are starting to see a lot more fiber based home networking stuff.
I think you can make an argument that it's worth putting dark fiber in your walls because it won't cost very much.
Yeah.
Like the same argument, right? Like it doesn't cost that much to put it in the walls when the walls are open. If you put it in after, it's going to be really expensive. But you want to be tactical about where you put it. Like you want to put it into where you think your entertainment center is going to go.
Right. Cause you probably don't need fiber to every single room, right?
Yeah, no, you want it where your PC is going to be and you want like a run to like the garage or wherever your network, think about where your network cabinet's going to go and put power and ventilation and star all your network stuff into there. And go out from there. The USB power plugs are an interesting question because, like, I don't like those. I think they're bad. Because those power standards are changing dramatically on the year to year, and B, like, I don't use them when I'm out in public because I think they're a security problem.
Sure.
Like, if you wanted to root somebody's phone real easily, you'd replace one of those power outlets in like Nathan's at the Las Vegas Convention Center that people use while they're eating a hot dog and charging their phone at lunchtime. And
You're not going to have security concerns about your own wall USB ports.
But you trust Home Depot?
Man, how deep does this conspiracy go?
Look, all the way down, Brad.
Yes, that's fair. Can't be too careful. I would add to that. I mean, you said the power standards are changing there, but the form factor standards are also changing. Like it seems like we're finally getting to the point where USB-C is becoming the standard.
Like you heard about USB-Ds?
What? Does that actually exist?
No, these nuts. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Wait,
I'm sorry.
This says there is a USB Type D connector.
Oh no!
No, wait a minute. Never mind.
Is it just a page that says these nuts and then points to the USB connector?
That's not actually real.
Oh, whew.
It was the first thing that came up. Says USB D connector unveiled, and then I clicked through and it was an April Fool's joke.
Whew. Thank goodness.
But I'm trying to think the last 4 or 5 consumer electronics things I've bought that have involved USB have all been USB-C. The controllers on both of these consoles.
Yeah.
The pair of headphones I just got, which we'll actually probably talk about in a minute on another email, use USB-C for charging. Trying to think, 1 or 2 other things I got recently. Oh, the Stream Deck, the Elgato Stream Deck that I got, also
USB-C. Oh, it uses USB-C?
Yeah.
No, mine's only A.
Hmm.
The iPhone ships with a USB-C to Lightning cable and no power brick.
I guess that's progress. That's
fantastic, I guess. I don't know.
Not quite getting the USB-C straight into the phone, but that's something.
Yeah, we're getting there.
I saw like a fair amount of people upset that the 12 doesn't actually just use USB-C, which I don't really, I'm not sure I entirely understand. What is the use case? Do people just want to consolidate cables? Is that what it is? They just want to keep carrying Lightning cables around?
It would be nice not to carry Lightning cables are kind of like Lightning cables have a shockingly short lifespan in my experience.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had one die before.
Well, so it may be moisture where we are, but there's one pin that always corrodes on them in our cars. And it may be because of like outside humidity, because it is wet here. But anyway, let's see other stuff. So the car charging, the solar, I think the smart home integration makes sense. Cause if you're going to do smart switches, you get the electrician to put them in when you're building the house. So strongly encourage you to get all the same kind of switch, and whether it's something that uses a proprietary hub, like the Leviton Caseta stuff or Lutron Caseta or the Leviton Z-Wave and Zigbee or whatever, you know, think about that. Put your hub where you want it to be. The thing I would say is that you can't, well, you're in Finland, so you know this, but if you're building in America, they will let you put way less insulation in your house than you should when you build it. And you should insulate the holy living shit out of everything. Windows, before those drywall walls are on, go through and take loose insulation and spray it in the cracks around your window frames, because most contractors in the US at least don't do that. And it'll make your house drafty as hell. And it's really hard to fix that once the drywall's on, because then you have to, it's just a pain in the ass. What else? I mean, I think solar makes a ton of sense depending on your latitude. Where we are in the north half of the US, it makes a ton of sense. Especially if your local power company subsidizes or buys based on demand. So like in California, if you have solar panels on, you sell during the day at the time that the rate is the highest in the afternoon when manufacturing is running and everything, and you buy back at night when it's dark, and it's way cheaper, and it's a good thing. And if you pair that with the EV charging rates, then you can get incredible deals on electricity if you put panels on your roof.
Do you have any sense of whether the panel efficiency is there at this point for the average person?
I mean, the third gen and on panels are real good.
Okay.
Like if you unless you have really exceptional electricity needs, or you do something goofy, like have an electric dryer or something like that, you should be break even in California, at least.
And do you think usage. I assume local storage solutions are probably modular enough that as those improve, you can kind of bolt those on after the fact?
Yeah, they're pretty expensive. Like, I don't know that the local storage makes as much sense.
Well, that's what I mean.
Because the batteries are expensive still.
Like, say, 5-10 years from now, because assuming you're probably going to be in this house for quite some time. Like, let's say 10 years from now, something like a power wall just makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call that modular. It's not like a USB thing that you plug in. Like, you have to, if you want to use those and have them be live when the grid is off, you have to have a cutoff for on your end of the network that turns off power going out of your house into the network, so that like if the power's out and the electric linemen are out there, line people are out working on down lines or whatever, there's not current coming back into the lines from your house that could hurt them.
Do you know if that's something they would toggle themselves if they were out there doing maintenance, or do you have to be around to make sure that stuff's enabled?
It should it should be automatic.
Okay.
Like it works in the same way that like a failover generator, like if you have a, if you're someplace where the power goes on, you have like a gas generator, a natural gas generator that fails over when the power goes out, you have, you're supposed to have that same kind of circuit on it. It should be automatic when the generator comes on. It would
sense that the lines are dead and just stop sending current out.
Yeah. It basically toggles a switch that flips when the power, and when the power comes back on, it switches back on and then the generator turns off.
Okay.
I think like if I were doing my house again, I would find a place to put a small server rack and and do
absolutely network closet, if not network basement.
Yeah. Like router switches, probably not Wi-Fi, cause Wi-Fi makes sense to put in places that are more central than maybe you would want to put this.
Yes. That is the ideal use case for having your router separated from your access points. So you can put those where they need to be.
Absolutely. And I would, when I'm, so when I placed the Ethernet in my house, when I did it 13 years ago, I did it based on where I thought like PCs and like streaming devices like Sonos's and stuff would be. I wish I had been foresightful enough to put a couple of power over Ethernet lines in places that Wi-Fi mesh nodes would make sense to live, like up, maybe even up in the attic where they're inaccessible for the most part or hanging off the ceiling or something like that.
Is crucial for Wi-Fi access points if you don't want to have to run external power to those things, which would be a real pain in the ass if they're on the ceiling.
Well, but that said, if you're doing the wiring for the house, it costs practically nothing to have the electrician add a couple more power outlets in weird places. So, for example, I have a power outlet in the crawl space that the switch that lives under the center of the house can go in. There's a Wi-Fi access point on that as well. You can do that in the attic as well. Like just, you know, put it by the attic door, make it easy to get to if your attic's not normally accessible.
Yeah. And I think any old modern Ethernet cable can do PoE, right? And you don't need specific
any four Ethernet four or five or something. I can't remember what it is, but it's real low. It's low power. You can buy adapters that plug in on either side.
Yes.
So like,
that's actually what I've got for my Ubiquiti access point. Cause I don't have a PoE router. So it comes with it. It came with it actually in the box, just a little AC adapter plus pass through Ethernet.
You just have to make sure that the DC end on the downwind side of the PoE is the right DC for whatever device you're plugging in.
Yeah. Man, future home building is a lot. Do you think there are like general contractors out there now that are starting to sub-specialize in this kind of like smart home, future home type stuff or?
Yeah, there's a whole spec. I did a story about it on Tested years ago. About like super green homes that are insulated appropriately and like there's specs for like how drafty they can be, how you handle things like radon buildup in a house that's completely sealed, because like normal houses are leaky enough that radon's not a problem. Stuff like that was absolutely fascinating, and it's very popular in especially Northern Europe, but most of Western Europe, including like Germany and France. And then in the US, there's like 12 houses. The time in 2010 or 11, when I wrote the story, there were, I think, 12 houses in the US that had been built to that spec. And, you know, it's the normal American stupidity where it costs like 10% more upfront, but it saves you 30% or 40% in utility cost every single year that the house exists. So over the 50-year lifespan of the house, it will save an unbelievable amount of money. But, you know, 10% more upfront, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, the value of being able to say, you can't tell me what to do, it's priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, American exceptionalism.
Yes. All right. Let's move on. Question from Matthew. I finished my hardware upgrades for the year and was lucky enough to secure both new consoles, a 3080 and two LG B9s.
Damn.
That's quite a haul. They all work great, excusing some driver issues, but my capture card and receiver are all HDMI 2.0 or earlier. Do you know when we can expect AV receivers, HDMI splitters, and capture cards to catch up to the new 2.1 standard? I don't have a good answer for this. I hope that you might have some insight, but like I just kind of have more questions around this because it feels like from what I've seen so far, the answer is a giant question mark.
It's a problem. My guess is we'll see HDMI 2.1 stuff at CES in January or whatever CES in January is. I don't expect like that stuff will roll out over the 6 months after that, probably. So it'll be announced in January. It'll roll out of the first half of the year. My guess is that we'll see like Elgato and Blackmagic and kind of the big, the high end capture companies roll out HDMI 2.1 parts early on. And then we'll see the kind of fast follow, Chinese electronics market vendors follow shortly after that. I think the secret is, if you're using one of these new consoles, you probably want to plug straight into the TV and let the ARC and the CEC stuff bring the audio signal back to your receiver. And then it doesn't matter what it is, assuming that the audio spec that your receiver supports is the audio spec that the console is outputting and is on the media that you're using. This stuff gets really complicated.
Yes, it certainly does. Capture cards on this list, that's the category I'm the least concerned about, because like I cannot imagine a time when you're going to really need to be capturing 4K 120, that's the only benefit of having 2.1 in a capture card. And like when is any major streaming service going to carry 4K 120 content?
Well, you could put it on YouTube, but you'd have to you can do 4K 60. I know.
I don't think they take 120 of any resolution, do they?
I don't know. I'm really curious when Twitch is going to up to 4K or 1440p. I am too, but
I think the bigger question there is when they're going to start letting you, or when are they going to start allowing ingest of more modern codecs?
Because that is a whole other thing. Yeah. If we could do H.265 on Twitch, the image quality would immediately go up at the same bit rates.
Or like VP9, AV1, like name all these modern codecs, but like there's a lot higher efficiency codecs that like H.264 is not going to cut it if we're going to move past 1080p.
Yeah. I think the solution though in the short term is to plug everything into your TV and hope you have enough HDMI 2.1 ports on the TV.
Yeah. That's probably the right answer, although that makes me mad because I like having like six consoles hooked up at one time. that gets messy.
It's really funny. I hooked up the Xbox One because my daughter started playing Human Fall Flat with a couple of her friends, and I forgot that the first gen Xbox doesn't support any of the EAC stuff, any of the CEC HDMI CEC stuff. It changed channels by using the Kinect IR emitter.
Yeah, the IR blaster.
Oh God. So I've had to teach her how to use a remote. It's a disaster.
The One X actually also did that straight out of the front of the console.
So stupid.
It continued to IR blast for years later after the Kinect went away, but
so stupid.
All that stuff's gone. All the Series X removed everything. No One Guide, which was the app that you used to handle, TV channel management. No support for those USB over the air tuners that you used to be able to plug in that I used for a long time. That stuff's just 100% gone. So
real loss.
End of an era.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to CES for this. I hope.
I would be shocked if Sony and Onkyo and kind of Denon and all the big AV manufacturers don't have HDMI 2.1 4K 120 hertz receivers announced and out by like March.
Okay, that's encouraging. March or April. That's encouraging because they have like there are basically none on the market right now, and it really made me concerned. Like, are AV receivers just going away?
Like, HDMI 2.1 just got ratified. Like it was recent.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like TVs have only had it in some form for the last year or two, couple years.
Well, and they were shipping with pre-release final hardware with pre-release software, probably pre-release specs. So
some of those first TVs that had the ports didn't even support all the features.
Yeah, I think one of the things I saw over the last couple of weeks was that people were having to do firmware updates on their TVs to support the Xbox One X and Xbox Series X and the PS5.
That is the biggest reason I have still held off on TVs, is that the support is just finalizing now, it seems like.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, we'll get there. Dylan in Ottawa. I recently spent a week meticulously comparing and pricing out a bunch of PC components for my first new build since 2007. However, on the day I was about to order everything, Dell suddenly had a crazy discount on their Alienwares, which meant I could get a machine with a 3080 in it for around $1,000 off. That's a pretty big discount.
That's a lot of cheddar.
Yeah, I jumped on the opportunity, but now I can't help feeling buyer's remorse. On paper, the Alienware is much faster than the PC I would have built myself. But I can't shake the feeling I've made a mistake getting a Dell. Any thoughts about Alienware and whether or not I made a bad choice? I haven't actually received the computer yet. He doesn't really go into a lot of detail about why he's wary of the Dell or Alienware brands, but
I mean, I guess maybe it's a big brand.
Yeah,
like,
I guess
that's
you could,
the thing.
You could probably expand this question out to just say, like, did I make a mistake getting a pre-built machine versus a, especially a highly integrated pre-built machine over building my own? Because some of the, you know, some of the, you name one, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but a lot of the pre-built vendors out there will just build with off-the-shelf parts, right? But I think like Alienware is probably in that category where everything is built to their spec, so it's very tightly integrated, and you can't necessarily just like put a bunch of new drives. Like the case may not accommodate a bunch of extra drives or like, you know, stuff like that.
So I haven't tested off-the-shelf computers in more than 10 years, so I don't know that I'm conversant on what's going on in the big market. Like the Dells and the Alienwares. In the olden times, Alienware machines were more off the shelf than Dells.
Yes.
So
yes.
Dells would have like custom motherboards with weird shapes and holes in the wrong places and all sorts of nonsense. So you couldn't really work on those machines too much. The Alienwares were just, you know, normal computers with, you know, fancy plastic cases. I don't think there's anything wrong with building a machine. It's like I actually know a couple of people who have, with the Ryzen shortages and the 3080 shortages, who have gone out and built an off-the-shelf computer just to harvest the CPU, yes, motherboard and video card out of them.
I've seen a number of people say that they bought pre-built machines just because that was the only way to get those things.
I do like often recommend. So there's kind of two scales of PC vendors. There's people that have like giant factories, and I think Dell slash Alienware fits in that category, right? Like it's a big operation. They sell tens of thousands of computers a month, and like they do things at massive scale. I think there's also a pretty strong argument for buying one of what we call the boutique vendors at Maximum PC. So places like Falcon Northwest and Origin. And Main Gear and places like that, where they're relatively small. They're bigger than like your local screwdriver shop, where some guy is just like ordering cases from Amazon or Newegg or whatever and putting stuff together. So they have a lot of, and they specialize usually in high end hardware. So like, you know, Origin, I recommend Origin a lot, so I'm familiar with what they do. They have a couple of like off the shelf SKUs that are basically like, you know, a pretty good all around PC, like a 3070 with a mid range, you know, octa-core CPU and 32 gigs of RAM and a 1 terabyte SSD. And it's all going to jam into a nice ITX case, and it'll be quiet and small, and it has a good warranty. And the thing that you get with those small boutiques that you don't necessarily get with Dell or Alienware is actual hands-on support if you need it. So like when I have friends who are maybe not going to like be comfortable swapping out a motherboard if they need to replace hardware at some point in the future, I usually push them toward, you know, Origin or Falcon or one of those places, because they'll get the help that they need, and then I don't end up doing support for them.
Sure. It's a good reason to do that.
Yeah.
My preference has always been, and I mean, I am just picky to the point of obsessiveness about the nature of every single part in the machine.
Yeah.
Down to what kind of RAM it is, like the brand of and the specs of the power supply, like everything, you know. And mm-hmm. I just want to know and have control over all of those details. And, you know, you're probably going to get a perfectly fine machine from most of the pre-built vendors, but you can't necessarily guarantee, like, you know, a lot of the like spec lists you'll look at will just say like 750 watt gold rated power supply, but it won't say what kind, for example. Stuff like
1 terabyte NVMe SSD.
Right.
Like it's going to be fast, but is it going to be the fastest thing that you could buy for that money? Probably not.
Or especially like with SSDs, is it going to be one of the ones that lasts the longest? You know, like there are details there to consider that you can't always account for with that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, you also trade, you know, if you're buying an Alienware or a Dell, you're trading the ability to make those decisions for when something breaks, you just call them and they send you a new one, you send the old one back, and then the problem is solved.
Also, it's, you know, it saves you hours and hours of hardware research that you have to do to make all those choices yourself, which, you know, I long ago came to terms with the fact that I enjoy a lot of things that most people find very boring. So I'm fine with that, but you know.
Well, yeah, like I really don't like my preference is to build my own computers.
Yeah.
if I was in a dramatically different financial situation, I might change my mind on that, but I don't think so. I kind of enjoy the, like, I enjoy the process and I like knowing how everything goes together. And I like, yeah. I like doing that still.
Totally.
But I mean, there is an argument. There is something nice about calling Origin and being like, yeah, I want something that is like a screaming fast Corvette and yeah. is going to have the living shit overclocked out of it. It's going to have a dope water cooling rig because, like, you know, doing that stuff yourself is scary and you can mess up and you cost yourself a lot of money if you end up dunking your video card or something. So
and like you said, those come with enough warranty and support that you have peace of mind about the longevity and stability of the thing. So that's fine. But
I mean, to the point even that, like, if you decide a year or two later that you want a new video card, you can, like, they'll let you send the system back to them and they'll put the video card in for you if you don't want to do that stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. Like you're building a relationship and I don't think there's anything wrong either.
No, that's fine. I have started thinking about a Ryzen build enough to start going down the apparently deep rabbit hole of memory spec for Ryzen systems.
So the thing Gordon said is that it's not as everybody's fear is that the Ryzen memory situation.
I'm not talking about stability and compatibility and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's more about peak performance. It's the what it actually is that, like, RAM speed never mattered that much with Intel. You know, it's like, you might see a percent difference or something like that.
Yeah,
there are much bigger performance deltas depending on dialing in the right speed of memory with Ryzen than I expected.
And latency, it's not just speed, it's also latency for Ryzen.
And the crazy thing I've come to find out, because again, this is a lot, is there's a fall off if you go too high. Ooh. Because the memory, what is it? The Infinity Fabric, I believe, is the controller right on the package that handles all the talking between core complexes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to one-to-one match your speed of memory with the speed of that thing. And if you go too far past what that thing can do, you're actually going to see performance drop because the memory is out of sync with the with the controller on the chip, basically. So there's a sweet spot. There's a curve. There's like a bell curve where if your memory is too fast, you're actually going to be worse off. So
everything's a lot of research. A spectrum. Yeah.
A lot of research.
The Unreal Engine games, a lot of Unreal Engine games are real memory bandwidth dependent on Intel. So
interesting.
Like PUBG, if you crank up your memory bandwidth, you see almost a one-to-one increase in performance.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That was never the conventional wisdom in past years, but
yeah,
how things have changed. Let's see. Got maybe one more email before we get into the thankful
business.
The thankful segment of the podcast. Martin in Dubai. Currently, I have my 3080 that was very hard to find connected to. I'll skip all the model numbers and stuff here, but an LG monitor that runs at 1440p at 144 hertz through a DisplayPort cable, and an LG C6 OLED that runs at 4K and 60 hertz through an HDMI cable. My question, is it possible to set up a macro key or install software that will allow me to press one button on my keyboard and turn one display off and change the Windows display settings to match the Mac settings of the other display? Currently, I have to turn off one of the displays, then use the display settings options in Windows. Doing this multiple times a day is going to drive me crazy soon. My use for this is to play more story-driven games at 4K on the TV with a controller and play more frame rate-dependent games on my fast refresh rate monitor.
I just went through this the other day.
Oh, what was your solution, if you have one?
So I have a 4K panel up top and a 1080p 4K 60 panel up top and a 1080p 360 panel down below. So there's a Windows hotkey that's really useful. This is Windows plus P.
Yep.
P is for projector, I think. And that lets you choose between main display, duplicating main display, extending the main display, and secondary display only. The trick is it cycles between the last mode used for each of those. So I have a capture card set up that duplicates the 1080p display onto the stream machine so I can capture 1080p 60 for streaming. If you need to use the NVIDIA control panel to do the cloning is the trick. And you need to, the order in which you click the monitors matters.
God.
So if you clone the secondary monitor, the 60 hertz monitor onto the 144 hertz monitor, then it's not going to work right. You're going to get everything running at 60 hertz. But if you clone the 144 hertz monitor onto the 60 hertz monitor, it just works.
Okay.
So order of operations matters.
Jeez, man.
It's stupid. It's like
PEMDAS for monitors here.
I literally was complaining about this to a friend of mine who also streams. He's like, oh, you just did them in the wrong order, dude. You just need to click the good monitor first and then click the second, the crappy monitor. I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
That's terrible because I've known about Windows P for years, but I've never been able to figure out the logic of what you're describing right now, which is how it decides what it does when you make one of those choices, because it seems so random. And this sheds a lot of light on why.
Yeah, it's
that's good to know. And also terrible.
It's
bad interface design.
I mean, you got to think about it in terms of like how Windows, like this is made for people who are plugging a laptop in, probably.
You're totally right. And this actually plays right into the problems I've been having with these monitors I got that have the DisplayPort hot plug on and off stuff.
Yeah.
Which is it's exactly what you said. It wants to assume that the person using Windows has no idea what's going to happen when they turn a monitor on or off.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I don't want it to mess with my Windows when the monitor's off, even though it thinks the display is missing. But a normal person does not want Windows on a monitor that's no longer there, right? Well, so the point I'm making is they always lean toward, like, I'm trying to think how to describe it, like, the most simplistic use case, I guess I would say, or the most, like, straightforward one for somebody who's not a lunatic like us.
Well, and the other good one is that Windows always treats the origin as the top left corner on the first monitor that you use, the primary monitor.
Yeah.
So if you have, if you have monitor windows on the left of that and they disconnect and reconnect, then it shifts all your windows around, jimmy jams them all over the place.
Yes.
If all of your secondary monitors are right of that primary monitor, everything just works.
Okay.
Or above or below. But if they're left, it's bad. Don't put secondary monitors to the left. The leftmost monitor should always be your primary monitor.
Always be the primary.
Okay. Always be the primary.
Interesting.
So what have we learned? my setup, I have duplicating the primary monitor onto the capture card, and then the 4K monitor is a secondary above. Hitting Windows P let's see what it says right now. Right now it says duplicate. So it's duplicating one and the capture card, and two is extended. If I change it to extend only, the capture card will unduplicate. If I change it to projector only, the 4K monitor up top will be the only thing on. If I put it on primary only, the 1080p will only be on. If I put it back on duplicate, I think it'll just work. The TLDR is I just don't change it anymore because it's too scary.
My eyes are starting to cross a little bit here. Just play around with it a little bit. It sounds like if you set up the House of Cards just right, you might get it where you want it. So you can just hit Window P and be happy.
The secret is getting the extend and the duplicate right, and then just using Windows P to switch between those two.
And then never touch it again.
Okay.
And always
click on the good monitor when you're doing the duplicate, not the crappy monitor.
Yes. The other suggestion I was going to make is our wonderful friend NurseOff to the rescue.
Oh, yeah.
I use a tool called Multi-Monitor Tool. It's the thing I use for automatically switching which desktop is the primary. But it does a ton of stuff, and it's got a pretty decent command line interface that you could probably script to do multiple things in one like batch file or something like that.
Put that on an Elgato button too.
You probably could do that. I'm sitting here looking at some of the stuff you can do. Enable and disable specified monitors, switch specified monitors, set the primary and secondary. You can save a current. Oh, wow. You can save a config in a .cfg and just load that config. So you could actually set up a pretty extensive configuration and just load that, I guess. Bunch of stuff for switching with primary, secondary monitors. I don't know if you can set refresh rate with this, though. That might be a problem.
I got to the point that I was looking at that when my friend told me about the duplicating in the right order thing. And then I was like, okay, I don't have to fool with this because I can make what I want work within the confines of Windows.
Yes. Sometimes you can just bend it to your will, but it's become a little bit of an inside joke on our Discord that you kind of can't think of an esoteric tech problem in Windows without there being a NurseOff tool to address it.
Always a NurseOff problem, a solution for every problem.
When I was first wrestling with these monitors, trying to make them do what I wanted, people pointed me at I needed the EDID of the monitor.
Oh yeah. I've used his EDID finder before.
So he actually has two there. He has two separate utilities that can both dump that information from the monitor. It's ridiculous.
I broke a Dell 30 inch monitor. No, what was it? There was a video card incompatibility with the Dell 30 inch dual DVI monitors at one point, and I had to rewrite the EDID, which was real exciting. And I used a NurseOff tool to do that, I believe, or at least to find the right one and then write the correct one back. Anyway.
He is
Thanks, Nerdsoft.
Upstanding member of society.
Wonderful human beings.
Doing a lot of public good. All right, let's get into some emails from people talking about things they are thankful for. I'm going to read this one first.
I'm thankful for emails, Brad.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, everyone, for sending them so we could do this episode. This is from Tom, Apple Crumble on our Discord. This kind of ties right into that Nerdsoft stuff. I'm thankful for open source. I'm thankful for everyone who puts their spare time into working on open source applications, often with little thanks and rarely any compensation. What open source tools and applications couldn't you live without?
Wow. I mean, we're using Audacity right now.
Yes, yes. I use both Audacity all the time for both this podcast and my day job.
I use VoiceMeter a lot, which is an incredibly useful like audio routing tool. I don't know that it's, I can't remember if it's open source or if it's just like shareware. Freeware.
I'd have to check. I don't know that one's open source. I'm not sure. I've come to rely on FFmpeg very heavily over the last 6 months.
It's an incredibly useful.
It's crazy how capable that thing is. Like, there's a reason they call it the Swiss Army knife of audio and video.
VoiceMeter is donationware, not
okay.
But I gave him $50 because I use it all the time.
Yeah. I've really gotten into using open source software for a variety of reasons. Like, it's always a bigger pain to set up on the front end.
Not always, but often.
Let's say.
Yeah.
Let's maybe not be absolutist about it, but quite frequently it's a lot of work to learn and figure out how to configure the way you want it.
Yeah.
But it almost always gives you so much more control over what it is you're trying to do than off the shelf commercial software.
Yeah, if you want to do something really ridiculous that no sane human being would ever want to do,
yes,
there's an open source program for that, probably.
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing about it.
I feel like FreeNAS is kind of waning in my regard right now, mm-hmm. but like stuff like Home Assistant and the Mister project, like these like the Mister is a perfect example of a thing that wouldn't exist if it weren't for this large community of people who were interested in archiving and preserving like the ways to play these old games on original hardware.
In fact, we have a great, counterexample to that, which is the analog stuff.
Yeah.
Because the analog stuff is how a commercial company is handling that exact same goal, except in their case, they are producing a different $200 box for every single console under the sun.
Yeah. That doesn't seem great for me. I'm much more into the buy one.
Yeah. Whereas yes, you can build a Mister for probably less than that at this point, or right around that, and it plays every console under the sun. So Home Assistant is another great example. Like, that Home Assistant is working again. It took a while to set up, but it is working so much better for me than the Apple Home stuff ever even came close to thinking about.
Yeah, well, and like once I realized you can turn automations on and off from inside other automations, then like, it's opened up a whole world of ridiculous like simplicity. So that,
that sounds great.
Yeah, it's very good.
That's pretty good.
I'm scrolling down my list of applications that I use on the day to day, and like VLC is another one that I use all
VLC
the time.
It's incredible. Yes. I use VLC as a capture card viewer. Like, that's another example.
You could do that.
So it's kind of just right there in plain view, and I just never noticed it for a long time. But if you go under media and then open capture device,
holy crap.
So it'll let you open any direct show device, or I think a lot of the UVC ones as well. I don't know if you're familiar with that distinction.
Wow.
UVC is like a webcam. It's what makes webcams show up in Google Meet and stuff like that, or Jitsi. Whereas direct show is what a capture card generally comes in as.
Yeah. I had no idea.
It's pretty fiddly. I won't get into all the details here, but I ended up having to set up a command line to make VLC open my capture card properly because the UI that they have for it is not great for doing that right.
Of course.
It's a little bit half-baked, but you can make it do exactly what you want, and it's like a perfect like little preview window for your for what's coming into your capture card.
And also shout out to Firefox, which is like probably the most used open source piece of software on my computer right now.
Yeah.
It is nice to use a browser that I'm pretty confident is not selling my business.
They unfortunately cut a bunch of jobs a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
If you saw that, which is not encouraging, unfortunately. But hopefully that stuff bounces back. Let's see here. How about... got so many of these. Boy, this is a somewhat dark one, but Scoot from the Discord wrote in. I've got a tech thing that I'm thankful for, but it comes attached to a painful story. Earlier this year, I was deployed on a 6-month naval operation where, while I was able to have some truly life-changing experiences, tragedy also struck. During a routine flight in April 2020, our ship's helicopter crashed at sea, and all 6 souls on board, people that we worked with and ate meals with and spoke to every day, were killed. The initial recovery operations were unsuccessful, and it was determined that the remains of the helicopter and our crew were at a depth of 3,000 meters, absolutely unrecoverable by divers. But with the help from multiple countries and deploying special underwater drones, the complete recovery of the remains of the aircraft, as well as our friends inside, was made possible, and their families and friends were able to properly put them to rest. This Wow. is something that I feel would have been unachievable or infeasible with the technology of a previous era, perhaps even 10 years ago. And for all of us on board, it was something that brought a lot of peace of mind. It's something that I felt thankful for this year, and I'm glad I could share.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's wild. I hadn't really thought a lot about undersea drones. Like, you hear the word drone and you just think aerial drone these days, but I wonder if similar technology, I assume, is making its way into kind of nautical stuff, underwater stuff.
Well, there's all sorts of stuff, both on commercial and like amateur level. You can buy for under $1,000 an open ROV kit. Or at least I haven't looked at the newer models. For a long time, you were able to buy for under $1,000 a tethered open ROV kit that that they designed to make underwater ROVs accessible and, like, I don't want to say disposable, because $1,000 isn't disposable, but like more disposable than the traditional $250,000 underwater drones that they were using prior to this. And it was basically a home, you know, it was a plexiglass box that was sealed with motors and buoyancy control. And like, people used it to explore cenotes in Mexico and cave systems and all sorts of places that you wouldn't want to send a normal human. And you also wouldn't want to send something that costs $250,000, because if you lost it, it would be gone forever. And if you lose the $1,000 thing, who cares? This is amazing. I did not know this story, and I really appreciate Scoot sharing it.
That's sort of uplifting at the same time as being quite sad.
But yeah.
It's cool that they can do stuff like that. I guess are most of them, the underwater ones, still tethered? I guess that would make more sense. Obviously,
a tether doesn't work great underwater.
Yeah, right. And a tether is much more feasible than with an aerial drone, of course.
Well, yeah, and the tether also gives you a recovery chance if something. Right. Sure. It turns out the ocean is unforgiving.
So I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are the Navy, I know, experimented. I don't know if they're actually using them, but they experimented with. Like hydrofoil style drones that do forward propulsion with buoyancy changes. So they kind of like do this wave motion up and down, and they're riding up and down, and they can go incredible distances. They come to the surface to charge with solar power. Huh. And they use them to they use them for all sorts of stuff. I believe that we also use those to track fisheries, but I'm not sure. Drones are cool.
Yeah.
That's the TLDR.
Well, usually. Yeah.
I mean,
until they all develop a collective consciousness. And
I'm not so much a fan of the kid who has one down the street that flies it over the house all the time too low, but yes, whatever.
They can be used for ill as well as good.
Yeah.
But you know,
yeah. Ain't that technology.
Yes. Travis in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's hard to imagine this being used for anything but good. For me, I'm thankful for wireless thermometers. Especially this time of year when smoking a turkey for the holidays. Not having to go out into the cold to monitor temperatures is a major plus. Hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Has the range gotten pretty good on those? I guess it must have at this point.
Yeah,
you could put one out in the backyard and just hang out on the couch with a beer and keep an eye on it.
I mean, look, even if it doesn't go that far, you can put the thing in the room nearest the smoker and just get up and walk to the smoker room rather than the that's a wireless things. I was explaining this to my daughter the other day, that like the phone used to be a thing that plugged into the wall and you had to stand next to it if you wanted to talk to somebody. And she thought I was joking. The fact that, you know, unlicensed spectrum is available and easy is definitely a thing to be thankful for.
Yeah, for sure.
And definitely we're not using it for bad things. It's only for good. It turns out. So
yes. Yeah. Well, smoking turkeys is
Look,
100% positive.
Turkeys won't smoke themselves.
That's true. Apparently, I read the other day the pandemic. This is pretty common sense, but apparently, the pandemic is hitting turkey demand pretty hard for this Thanksgiving.
Really? I would think it would be up.
Specifically, larger turkeys is what I read. Like the demand smaller turkeys, because the gatherings are just generally so much smaller this year.
Yeah.
For people that are getting together, it's a lot more like 4 people, 6 people, stuff like that. So,
usually do a 21 pounder and we ordered 13, I think. So
that's exactly what I saw. Is that demand for the turkeys in the 20 pound range or so is
big fat turkeys get to live another year.
It's not great for farmers though that specialize in that kind of stuff.
Well, that does seem bad. I mean, I guess we could do our part and order a 21 pound turkey and then just eat turkey for 10 days.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
I mean, look, if you want to come down,
I will do my part.
If you want to come down and pick up a thing, I will put out a container with food for you on Thanksgiving morning, Brad.
I will do my part for America's farmers.
Yeah.
eat 2 weeks worth of turkey.
Look, I have a picture of you gnawing on a turkey leg from at least 2 years.
I always went one turkey leg too far.
Look, there's no such thing as too many turkey legs.
Oh boy. What is your ideal turkey sandwich? Do you have a go-to?
Yeah, I like white bread, mayonnaise, pepper, lettuce, turkey, cranberry sauce, more mayonnaise, a little bit of pepper.
Damn.
And then close it up.
That's serious.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about the cranberry sauce. The rest sounds pretty good.
Oh, the cranberry sauce adds a tartness to it that's delicious.
Yeah, I can see it.
It's just like a tiny, you don't have the cranberries in there. You just take the jammy part.
Okay,
and just kind of smeared on there.
I was just about to ask. It depends on, are you using the canned stuff that comes out in the shape of the can?
Have you ever had the canned stuff when you were at my house at Thanksgiving, Brad?
I don't know that I've ever had cranberry sauce. In general, period.
Look, we put the cranberries on the stove with a cup of sugar and a cup of water. They cook for about an hour until the cranberries all pop. And then you cover it and it come down to room temperature and put it in the fridge. It's delicious.
Maybe I've been missing out then.
Also a little bit of orange peel. Little orange zest.
All we ever had was the canned stuff. So you can understand why I...
Look, I grew up on the canned stuff too. Look, here's the secret. If somebody asks you what you want to bring, don't go to people's houses for Thanksgiving this year because it's a terrible idea if you're not in the United States, you're probably not going to celebrate Thanksgiving. If you are in the United States, don't go to people's houses for Thanksgiving.
Unless you're in Canada, in which case I hope you didn't go somewhere on Thanksgiving.
If somebody asks you what you want to bring for future Thanksgivings, volunteer to do cranberry sauce because it's the easiest thing in the world to make.
That does sound pretty easy.
You buy a bag of cranberries. You make sure there's no rocks in the cranberry bag because that is a thing that happens. You take out any of the soft, squishy cranberries. You only want the hard ones. And then you put them in a pot with like a cup or two of water, a cup or two of sugar. Literally you scrape a little bit of orange zest off. You can just put a peel orange in if you want. It doesn't matter. Chuck it in there. Cook it. When all the cranberries pop, you're done. Wow. Chill it and take it. It's easier than anything.
Talking like low, medium heat?
Like you want it to simmer.
Okay.
Yeah.
God, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
Why does that always happen on this podcast?
Look, but when you don't leave the house much, food is what you have to look forward to.
My go-to was just leftover turkey, sliced tomato and mayonnaise. That's it. Just.
Oh, see, no tomato on a Thanksgiving turkey sandwich.
Oh man. Wham, bam. Thank you. Turkey sandwich.
I'll also do a open face with some gravy, like white bread. I'm not talking about like fancy white bread. I want like Wonder Bread, right? Like the squishy.
Yes, for sure. Just plain old. Yes.
A thin layer of stuffing. Some thigh, like some carved thigh meat. If I do the roulade, then I'll do that on there. And then gravy just poured over the top. Just slathered.
Good Lord, man.
It's not a healthy sandwich.
No, no, it is not. Let's see here. Travis says, I have to say the tech I'm most thankful for is gaming this year. The lockdown, natural disasters, and political situation in the U.S. have been much more bearable with releases like Half-Life Alyx, letting me escape from reality and Doom Eternal and getting some angst out. Video games still feel normal, even though not much else does. I still need to play Half-Life Alyx. Now that I've got this 3080, I was kind of waiting on getting a better GPU so I could play it at full everything.
And it's pretty good.
I should probably do
that. You should play it.
It's a good game. I'm going to do that. Also, I fired up Doom Eternal the other day on this 3080 for the first time, and holy shit.
Yeah, right?
Everything as cranked as it could possibly get, I did not see it drop below 250 frames a second.
No, it works out.
It's intense.
The one thing I said this during Extra Life, but it was like, honestly, one of the things that helped me keep my mental state over the last 4 years as we watched American democracy crumble was that I was able to hang out with my friends every night and play PUBG and like just like play a game that required full focus all the time and was engaging. And yeah, it kept me from doom scrolling at night. And for that, I am grateful.
Yes, there is absolutely something to be said for diverting your attention for a little bit.
If you have that luxury, it is okay to do.
Yes. Cole from Montreal. I'm thankful for many pieces of tech in my life this year, but two things have really stood out to me. A good pair of wireless headphones for my PC. I'm using the SteelSeries Arctis 7, for example. This is especially nice if you work from home and are a frequent participant of long meetings.
Mm.
I just got my hands on some Astro A20s.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Is like, there's like their budget.
Are they wireless, earbuds or are they wireless headphones?
No, they're full. Reach over and grab them here. It's basically the full Astro shape headset, but it's not, I guess the A50s are their nice ones. These are a little bit on the lower end. They feel maybe the build quality is not quite as robust as the plug-in ones, but I'm kind of shocked that the latency and the quality are like right there. Honestly, cool. I was pretty surprised that
are you using for consoles like in the living room or something?
Not yet. I got it comes with a transmitter, a USB transmitter.
Okay.
And you have to make a console choice.
Got it.
I got the PS5 ones. So
okay.
I think buying the transmitter for the other type of console is like an extra $20. I haven't gotten my hands on that for the Xbox yet, but I've just used them on the PC so far. But I was just like, I guess I was always a little skeptical of wireless audio, but it's pretty good.
I don't like it for PC stuff because when I'm sitting here, I want to have the good headphones with the good mic on them for streaming stuff.
Sure. Yes. You'd want to plug in for if you're streaming or something like that, but this is just for like listening to music or YouTube videos or whatever. It's totally fine.
Well, I mean, we used to have like when we lived in the apartment and I lived in a loft for a long time and our bedroom was in the loft area. So like if I wanted to play games on the big TV and Gina was asleep because she had to get up early because she had a grown up job, I had some like 900 megahertz wireless headphones. And it was really nice to be able to just lounge in the living room with headphones on and not bother everybody else in the house with whatever, you know, loud, stupid movie I was watching or loud, stupid game I was playing. So, yeah. I'm into it.
I really appreciated on the last generation of consoles adding the eighth inch headphone jack to the controllers.
Yeah.
Like I use that all the time.
Yeah, they did. The 360 did that too, didn't it? You got to buy an adapter, I think.
There might have been an adapter. It was definitely not in the controller.
Oh, no. It's the PS3 you could do wireless.
That sounds right. Bluetooth. Yes. PS3 has had external or separate wireless headphones for a while, but just having every controller essentially also be kind of a wireless pair of headphones. Not quite. I mean, you're tethered to the controller, but
it's very convenient.
Yes, it certainly is. Cole says, secondly, my rock solid local and Wi-Fi network. I've been using a Ubiquiti edge router and some wireless access points in mesh mode. Team Brad for network here. Fancy routers, man.
I'm increasingly on Team Brad when it comes to this.
Yeah.
I haven't made the move yet. I haven't made the move yet, but I'm the number of problems that come from having this stupid AT&T router that sucks.
Yeah.
Like I think the next time there's a problem, it's going to be like time to hit the old Ubiquiti store.
That'll do it. I don't know how I feel about Ubiquiti these days. It seems like, I'm sorry, you're taking your glasses off now. I must have said the wrong thing.
Oh, crap.
I mean, they're really pushing into the consumer space, and it seems like the stuff they're doing there is really good for that. But the Edge Router line is kind of languishing from what I've seen. And I don't know, some of the like
the how often do you need to update router? Like, it's not, if it can do gigabit, who cares? That's all anybody has, right?
If you're only on gigabit, you're probably fine. Let's say that internet connections were going to get faster than gigabit someday. You might think about
upgrading your router when when connections are faster than gigabit someday.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Okay. Oh no.
But I don't know. That is potentially for way down the line. But I almost at this point, if I had it to do over again, I don't obviously, but I think I would probably go the West Fenland route and build a nice little PFSense or OpenSense box. Because I mean,
don't
like,
tell
I'm all
me
about,
this. Don't tell
about,
me this.
I'm all about modularity these days. Just like pulling the Wi-Fi out of the router and making it an external access point is nice because you can swap those out whenever you want. What if you had a PFSense box and you could just swap the network card out on that? Let's say if you had a need for something, you know, like let's say you went to fiber instead of copper in your house or something like that. You know, like maybe.
Yeah.
Like you could put, you know, like relatively cheap 10 gig fiber network cards are getting pretty ubiquitous at this point. So like having things be upgradable is the way to go for me.
You're thinking about this the wrong way. It's what, $200 for a Ubiquiti Edge router that'll do a gigabit to people's house.
I got
like $180 maybe.
I got mine on sale for $150. They can be had pretty cheap.
Yeah, the resale market for that is going to be real good. Yeah. So your opportunity cost to have that and not have to fool with the other stuff for the next N years until you actually get 10 gigabit in the house and 2 gigabit to the curb.
Yes.
Is $40 probably?
Yes.
So, you know,
probably right.
Yeah, you'll spend more than that in power on your PFSense box.
You're right.
Unless you are really careful.
Fine.
Don't do it, Brad. Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be. It's already complicated enough.
It's got to rain on my parade.
Dang it.
Let's see here. Let's do one or two more. This is an interesting question that's kind of ties into the holidays from Jacob. I'd love to know what you and other listeners are doing to make some sort of normal, quote, home for the holidays experience work digitally. I'm especially thinking about how to do a more easy to use wide field video presence, like you're on either end of a table from one another. I know in my case, I've bought a bunch of ridiculous streaming equipment to improve my digital presence, but I don't expect that my family or friends would have the same or know how to set up a more complex video rig. Ultimately, I'm wondering if things like Facebook Portal, which I'm against because I'm a no Facebook account holder, Google Nest Hubs, Echo Shows, etc. are the right way, or if there are other simple consumer-friendly solutions that anyone has tried out. My current plan for Christmas is to have everyone join a Skype call, and I'm going to live switch videos from multiple households to create a produced style video. That's ambitious.
I'm impressed. I like that. Yeah.
I'm impressed at the amount of thought going into this. That's pretty good. But also, I admire the commitment to like trying to have togetherness, but not actually going just straight up going to somebody's house, because, again, you should not be going to somebody's house.
Don't go to somebody's house.
We're in deep shit right now.
On the video front, like the best home video conferencing experience I think I ever had was using Skype and a Kinect 2 on an Xbox One.
Wow.
Like consistent. If you had those on both ends, it was really good. It kind of face tracked a little bit, so it would zoom in on the person that was talking or whatever. We do a lot of like setting up a MacBook or an iPad on a stand and putting that in front of the TV and then airplaying the FaceTime call to the TV. And like, it's not a great experience. You get a lot of like audio feedback from the TVs and like people are like, "Hey, I can't hear you because you're too far away from the microphone."
Yeah. We also do a lot of like targeted FaceTiming for that exact reason, which is that it's not the most enjoyable way to communicate for long periods of time. So we just kind of get in and out.
We focus like on Christmas morning with the kiddo. We do like, we save the grandma and grandpa presents to open until they're on FaceTime, and we do FaceTime with them to open that stuff. And we do the same thing for all the aunts and uncles, and like, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
Personally, I wouldn't want to do the streaming setup because I don't want to have to, like, I want to be able to pay attention and not have to manage that. But if somebody in the family wanted to do that, I'd be all for it.
Yes. Half the reason I wanted to read this email is I'm curious if anybody is doing like an extended everybody at the table kind of session for stuff like this. Like,
so we're going to do that for Thanksgiving. You're like more than welcome to join. It'll be the sister-in-laws and all that.
Sit down and have a whole meal while on a thing.
That's the intent. I don't know how long it'll last.
What if you get jealous of somebody else's food because everybody's going to be eating a different meal? That's an interesting way to like remove part of the shared experience, which is that like what if somebody just like shows up and orders a pizza? It's like, I didn't feel like cooking. I'm just going to eat pizza over here.
Yeah, what if our turkey's on fire and everybody else's is really nice and moist and succulent and like I don't know. The Facebook portal So I haven't had, I mean, have you used, you don't use any of the voice activated stuff, right?
No.
Yeah. So I don't have one of the, I've not used one of the Nest Hubs or the Facebook portal for similar reasons to Jacob. Same thing for the Echo Show. I ordered a Nest Hub.
What
for Gina?
What is a Nest Hub?
It's like a, one of those Google mini speakers with a screen on it. Because she spends a lot of time watching like news and stuff in the kitchen when she's doing other stuff.
Okay.
So I did that as like, instead of getting a TV for in there.
How big is the screen? Is it like,
kind it's of like 8 inches. It's like smaller than an iPad.
All right.
I don't know. I know that the Facebook portal, I have seen demos of it and it seemed pretty good. You solve the, hey, does everybody have a Skype account problem with Facebook by doing that thing? But like, I don't want to have that in my house.
Yeah, I agree with
so
you.
I don't know.
Yes, this is kind of tangential to this topic, but that was, it's kind of fascinating to me. Have you seen any of the AI driven video conferencing stuff that NVIDIA is working on?
Yeah, we didn't they demo it in that briefing we did a few months ago?
I don't think they had that in there. This is specifically video chat, like just like we're doing right now, just over a call, people talking to each other with webcam.
It's the thing where they
maybe they did touch on it.
Do face analysis and measure your
So yeah. you know, like a normal video chat, you're sending just a static video feed, right? It's just frame data, right? Which is like what, megabits per second of data?
Yeah, something like that.
They were saying this is down to like hundreds of kilobits.
Yeah, because they're sending blend shapes, I think, right?
Right, right. So like the way it was described is that they are essentially just sending a deep fake of your face, or they're manipulating a deep fake of your face locally on the other person's computer, which is just kind of creepy. But they can do things like diverting your eye line to make it look like you're looking into the camera. So that, well, both people.
FaceTime does that now, does I think.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. Like, huh. Like it looks like if you're looking down at the screen, it looks like you're looking up at the camera up 10 degrees or whatever. Wow.
I wonder if that's probably only on the newer models. With
it might only be on the newer phones.
Facial analysis stuff, right?
Yeah, maybe. That's a trip.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like,
it's both fascinating.
I like it.
Yes, totally. It's fascinating that they can do it. And also, I'm not sure if they should.
It fits in the DLSS category of this is really magic and it seems good, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we talked about it with Gordon a little bit a couple weeks ago, but like, I don't know how, like, I can't imagine you're going to run 4K stuff or even 1440p stuff with ray tracing on, even on the new cards, without having DLSS on. Yeah,
you're probably right.
But are those benchmarks true? Because they're just making stuff up at this point.
Right.
Like, and filling. I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah, I'm really, I mean, I want to play Cyberpunk, but I'm also really excited to get my hands on Cyberpunk as a test case for that stuff.
Yeah.
Because that seems like the big one of like, you know, big open world, a lot of effects stacked on top of each other. Like, what's that ray tracing performance going to be like? How is DLSS going to work there?
Yeah. Watch Dogs Legion is a pretty good test case.
That one, from everything I've read, like the CPU demands of that thing are so extreme. Like it.
That is true.
My 7700K was not remotely up to snuff for that thing.
The one thing I will say for people who are thinking about doing this for the first time for Christmas or Thanksgiving, as like the first couple of years my daughter was around when we were doing Christmas, we would just have the FaceTime thing going all day. And it ended up being a real low value kind of interaction with the grandparents and the aunts and uncles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because like it just ended up being annoying for everyone.
I can see that.
It's better to do like a focused, limited time where you're actually paying attention to and enjoying each other's company than I think, for me at least, than it is to try to do it all day like you were actually in the same room.
Yes. Agreed.
Like, we don't need the drunk uncle yelling about how, you know, Q or whatever nonsense this year will be about.
Let's just not.
Yeah.
Let's just not. Instead, let's call an end to the emails.
You know, if you wanted to send an email to the next email episode, you would do that by emailing techpod@content.town.
Do it.
And if you wanted to have more conversations like this on the day to day, it turns out there is a fabulous Discord, which is one of the things I am like, I said this on a different show the other day, but like the last year, I don't know how I would have coped with the last year if it hadn't been for the communities that have sprung up around this podcast and my Twitch stream.
Yeah.
The thing that amazes me about Twitch and Discord and how those two things work with each other is that, like, like I, we, I mean, we've both had incredible communities at other properties and other sites and stuff like that. And the density of fabulous conversations and interesting people, and at the same time, like very little need for moderation or any kind of like people who are able to just be responsible and grown up and have nice chats on the internet, is something that I hadn't expected to get in 2020.
Yes. So just an invaluable little extra boost of social contact, camaraderie, for sure. And we just get so many fascinating people in that Discord. One of our Discord members works for Embark Studios, that we talked about last week.
I was shocked.
Is working on a lot of that future tech. So that was like super awesome to see.
I had a conversation with one of the folks there about how they do that stuff, and like the results that there's more blog posts than we talked about last week. But yeah, like it's opened a lot of really interesting doors for me personally. I think everybody is enjoying being part of that conversation, it seems like. And you can find out how to do that by going to patreon.com/techpod, which sounds like the shilliest thing I've ever said.
But it is true.
I mean, we charge basically the minimum you can charge on Patreon and still like make a little bit of money to get into the Discord. It's $2 a month. Yeah. I feel like I would pay that.
Bet you
I don't have to, obviously, but we really appreciate everybody who supports the pod.
Absolutely.
And contributes to the Discord, talks to us on Twitter. We've talked about starting a subreddit with a couple of folks now, if people are into that. I want to make sure we thank Julian, who has done transcripts for all of our recent podcasts, starting with like episode 52, I think 51. And so if you have friends who are deaf or hard of hearing who just don't want to listen to us talk for an hour and a half, they can read the transcripts that Julian's doing. Thanks to everybody who supports the show. Like I said, whether it's on the Patreon or by telling other people about it, the thing that helps us more than anything else is letting other people know about the show, and we really appreciate it. I'm thankful that you all choose to spend your time with us. That is a real treat.
Endlessly gratifying.
And I'm especially thankful for our executive producer level patrons, who we thank every week, Jacob Chappell, Andrew Cotton, and David Allen, as well as the other. Hold on. Let's see. There are 1,294 patrons on the Tech Pod right now. Thank you all. If you wanted to subscribe and you didn't want to do monthly subs, we have an annual option now with a little bit of a discount attached to that. And I guess we'll see you all next week on another edition of Brad and Will Made a Tech.
Go on.
Pod. Bye. Everyone.